And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
It's not about me. I'm only here for a minute, and I know that I can't fix it. I can help even just a little bit. Won't you let me try?
Hello, welcome to our Laz and Powers. This is Scott Powers with Mark Lazarus. We're in person. We're about to start a hockey season. We're, yeah, it's...
We exist because we haven't podcasted. Like, I think we have one podcast.
We do have the one podcast. I feel a lot worse if we didn't have that one podcast. And again, we're in the parking lot of Manny's, which...
This is our office. This is our studio. It's the parking lot of Manny's.
The Athletic may want to look into Manny's sponsorship here.
Laz and Powers is brought to you by pastrami and corned beef.
Yes, and very good... potato pancakes, potato.
I'm more of a matzo. The latkes here are more like potato cakes because they're so thick. They're still delicious. I'm more of a matzo ball soup guy.
But. It's been a long off season, but it's also like.
But nothing's happened since we last talked. Like, we would have been like, I know there are people out there that just want they do a podcast every week, no matter what. But they're just killing time, man.
Yeah.
You actually finally, 3 months after your baby was born, got some paternity leave. That was nice.
Yes, no, indeed.
I just started, watched all of For All Mankind because my kids are back in school, and I was able to actually still watch some grown-up shows. I haven't done really much of anything.
There's a show. I actually thought this year maybe we can do a segment and we can figure out, we never really stick to anything. But if we had, a pop culture segment, because I've watched so much TV over the last 6 years.
Yeah, I don't think you and I watch the same thing.
I know, but that's the fun thing is that there's a show called The Detectorists.
The Detectress?
Detectorists. It's not, I don't think it's that. I think it's just Detectorists. But it's by one of the guys who did the UK Office, and it's about metal detectors. And it's just like this okay. It's this comedy. There's an app, like a TV service called Acorn, and it broadcasts like English.
Are you going to make me sign up for yet another? I have 37,000 streaming services, and I still couldn't watch Northwestern.
This show might be worth it. And it's also great because just like a lot of UK shows, like it's like three seasons and it's out. Like it's like they know when to cut things off.
They're efficient.
It's called Detectorists, and it was just two metal detectorists and the club they belong to, and they live in like in a small little English community, and it was
all right. Well, if we do a pop culture segment, though, it's going to come at the end of the podcast. Not
yes,
during
no,
the intro,
no, no, no. So. I've already wasted. Yeah, my
we are 3 days
let's
away.
Talk hockey.
It's Monday afternoon as we record this, and we are 3 days away from the start of Blackhawks training camp on Thursday at Fifth Third Arena, 10 a.m. Open to the public. Wear a mask. And we got a lot to talk about. We're going to start by talking about just in general the battles to watch for, the storylines entering camp. We'll talk a little bit. I was at the NHL Player Media Tour this weekend and talk about some of the interactions I had. Marc-Andre Fleury was there, Patrick Kane, Seth Jones, and Alex DeBrincat were all there. Four out of the 30 players were Blackhawks, which is a lot. So I have some star power, and that was in Chicago. And Scott's going to talk about we'll talk about the prospect tournament, which he dutifully watched and broke down.
I was not
film
there, but
and,
I did watch. Yes.
On grainy, streaming video from the wild, and you still managed to somehow break down all the film and stuff. Very impressive work. Then we're going to answer some questions we got on Twitter here, and as we enter the season. So. I just sat down with Calvin DeHaan for a story I'm working on for it'll probably come out sometime next week, and there's a real excitement around the Blackhawks this year. Like they really, One of the things I asked at the players tour this week, I was asking everyone from the Central Division, there are six teams in the Central Division that are absolutely convinced they're playoff teams. And obviously they can only be five, maybe four. Pacific's really bad. It's going to be five. But so how does that work? Someone who is supposed to make the playoffs is not going to make the playoffs. And if you look around the league and you look at the gambling lines, you look at the prognostications, everyone's saying it's the Blackhawks are going to be the odd man out. How do you see, what are the Blackhawks right now? Are the Blackhawks a playoff team?
One, I think the Kaprizov stuff with Minnesota, like, it makes a difference, you know? I've been thinking about this, too, and I think it's, there's so many ifs, and the ifs go right. The Blackhawks are a lot better than we think, but there's so many ifs that have to be, go the Blackhawks' way. It's, you know, if Taves is right, if Doc, you know, gets back on the progression, like, if Borgstrom or Reichel or Gaudette or Strom or your third and fourth centers, you know, like, you...
If Fleury is still Vezina winning Fleury.
Yeah, like, yeah, it's weird, like, you go from having such, like, biggest, you know, enter last season, your biggest question marks, like, none of these goalies are proven, and now you have a pretty stable net again, you know, I think Seth Jones needs to be something that's pretty special, but maybe he doesn't need to be as good as, you know, like, as everyone thinks, because you have McCabe and you have Murphy, and the defense looks so much different than last year.
Looks good.
Yeah.
It's, like, legitimately good.
Yeah, first time in, probably since, what, 2017 or 16 that you feel pretty good about the defense being solid, and, you know, this is the first time that Colleton has his guys, and, you know, guys that could probably play, you know, or should be able to play his system. So the numbers should reflect that. I think there's a lot of pressure on Colleton to, you know, like, it's not just win, but it's to prove that your system and what you're trying to do defensively, it works with the right personnel. So I we'll get into it, but the roster battles are really unique because they have more NHL talent, I think, especially forwards, than they've had in some time. But you need guys to pan out. Like, you need Strom to kind of return to form, or, you know, if it's Reichel or if it's Gaudette. I mean, they put a lot of stock in acquiring Borgstrom, and, you know, if Borgstrom doesn't pan out, like, that trade doesn't look as good if you're just, you know, like, I know Stillman's added, but he's probably a sixth or seventh defenseman, and Conley, I assume, probably, you know, a healthy scratch on this team. So, yeah, they put a lot of stock in this Borgstrom being the real deal, so... I think there's the possibility where I think in recent years, you know, especially when we've talked to scouts or people like, no, this is the last place team. This, right. You know, this team's really bad. And I think when you look at this team, especially on paper, you can be like, yeah, this could work. And there's a lot more optimism than there had been in you know, yeah, 3 or 4 years at least.
I remember right after the Jones and Fleury trades, everything happened. Like the day after everything calmed down, I was texting with a player on the team. And he saw a tweet of mine where I said, okay, best case scenario. And I listed what I thought was the best looking lineup, like knee-jerk reaction lineup. And a player texted me with a screenshot of my tweet. And he said, that's a team that's going to win a lot of games. They believe that, like, they're not, like, putting on PR. They believe that this is a playoff team now. These players, especially the veterans who have been waiting for the team to kind of get back in the win-now mode, they're stoked. They think there's something there. Let's start with Seth Jones. I wrote about him today. And we've been having some fun with the Dom Lucision stuff where Dom hates Seth Jones and thinks he's the worst player ever, which is not true at all. And, you know, I'm talking to people who's like, he's like a god descended from heaven. Obviously, he's somewhere in the middle. He is certainly not a bad player. The question is, can he be the dominant player he was 4 years ago? And everyone projected him to be the rest of his career. The problem, I feel like we need to clarify this because people were like accusing me of being hyperbolic. And of course, I'm always hyperbolic. But in the story, it's not. I believe that Seth Jones is a good hockey player. He makes the Blackhawks better, sure. The question that we've been harping on was he worth the price they paid? Not just in the trade, but in that money. They gave him an 8-year, $76 million contract, a $9.5 million cap hit for a guy who was bad last year. He said it himself. I didn't have a good season last year. He knows that. So nobody thinks that Seth Jones sucks. There may be someone out there on Twitter, but nobody who actually has a brain thinks that Seth Jones sucks. Nobody's implying that he sucks. But there is this narrative that he's already washed up, that he's on the decline. He doesn't even turn 27 for a couple of weeks. So a lot of this hinges on Seth Jones. He is an improvement. He's better than Duncan Keith has been the last couple of years. Duncan Keith hasn't been a true number one in a while, and he was still being leaned on like one. Seth Jones is going to play you 24 minutes tonight. He's going to be competent, and he's going to help the power play. He's going to make you better. If he could be great again... He keeps harping on the fact that he wants to improve his offense, and they need that. They need more offense from the back end. But, you know, if he can be mostly what he was. He's a huge upgrade for the Blackhawks. And like you said, I mean, you know, you've got Seth Jones. Jake McCabe is, by the way, the best signing the Blackhawks made this offseason. Like, the best acquisition. I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury is great, and Seth Jones is really good, all that. But Jake McCabe's the guy they've needed for years. A true shutdown to compare with Connor Murphy and just a lockdown Oduya-Jalmerson-style pairing. This defense looks pretty good. Will they play pretty good? Or will they be set up to succeed? Will they adopt to, quote-unquote, the system that we're always talking about with Jeremy Colton? These are the questions that won't be answered in training camp. We don't know how they're going to perform until mid-November, maybe. So issue number one, Seth Jones. Is he going to be the good Seth Jones? And will this defense as a whole, you know, be put in a position to succeed?
I don't know.
I don't know either. That's what's fun.
But
and we're not going to know about it in camp. That's not, you know, we'll have an idea of what shape Jonathan Toews is in, but we're not going to know if this defense is any good until they played a lot of games.
I guess starting off with the system, I don't think there's anything wrong with the system. I mean, right. It's a similar system to a lot of people. And it's funny, when we were just talking over lunch right now, I was watching clips of the Blackhawks last couple of games against Dallas, which were just atrocious, where they've been outshot, you know, 40-10 or some. And as much as they've added pieces, I think getting rid of Zadorov was just as important. Like, a lot of the breakdowns that happened in the defensive zone were due to him and getting him exposed and people having to cover up for him. And, you know, there's other guys that have issues. And I think this also allows, you know, guys like Beaudin and Mitchell and a lot of guys, and even Kelenic had his issues last year in the defensive zone. Like, you bring in enough experienced guys, like, you can send those guys back to Rockford and they can take their time. I think now they have, you know, they have six defensemen, you know, if you add in Stillman and Jones that they believe in, that are veteran guys. And you don't necessarily, I think Kelenic might get a look just because he's so high end offensively. Might
he
be
can
like,
also play both sides.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, he could be a second power play unit type of guy too. I think he might make sense too. He's a little bit older, but, you know, Beaudin and Mitchell and, you know, we'll get into the prospect camp, but the prospect tournament, but, you know, Grula, there's other guys that, you know, saw some NHL time last year that I think that you can be more patient with. And sometimes the Blackhawks have been impatient with their defensemen. Like, if they waited longer on Forsling, you know, if he could be, if the Blackhawks had Forsling now to what he was in Florida this past season, like, he'd be a top four defenseman. And, you know, I think the Blackhawks even more patience with Boqvist, they could have used it, and, you know, I think Beaudin and Mitchell last year was strange, but those guys can use a lot more time in Rockford. So I think having capable defensemen and one of them not being Zadorov, I think benefits them. Like, they're more likely to be able to play the system. You know, from everything I've talked to and seen of Seth Jones, I think a lot of scouts' concerns are about the way that he defends the rush. So I don't know if that changes, but I think within the defensive zone, like, he can be solid, and he's playing with better offensive players now too. So, like, that could definitely, I mean, Columbus wasn't exactly a great team.
People, like, overlook that. Like, Columbus was awful last year. You know, your numbers are going to be affected by that.
Well, I think part of it is, I think they looked at Wierzynski and his numbers were actually pretty good. So, yeah. Like, it wasn't, like, affected by the whole team. So, but
All right, I'm on the back end. Seth Jones sucks. Got it.
But I think that he benefits from better forwards too. Like, if they're, you know, like, I think the
Blackhawks... He's an offensive-minded guy.
The Blackhawks, you know, you took away Panarin from that Columbus group and they didn't have as much offensive firepower. So I think that could help Seth Jones. He's obviously motivated, and I would assume that he put a lot of time into this summer to work on some of those issues. And he just got acquired to be the number one defenseman. There's some pressure, but there's also, it also maybe helps someone rise to the challenge too. So yeah. I'm curious, but I also think the Blackhawks have a group around him that can maybe support his weaknesses and, you know, accentuate his strengths. And, you know, like, there's and I'm sure this is a conversation you and I are going to have as long as we're on this beat together and his contract's rolling along. But if he's good now and the Blackhawks can win in the short term, like, I don't think he worries as much of what 7 years, 7 and 8 are, right? Like, right. I think he's a definite upgrade from Duncan Keith.
There's, like, one thing we've learned is you don't have to make it to year 7 and 8.
So, yeah, I'm curious. I think there's reasons to be... maybe not to believe that Seth Jones is another Norris caliber, you know, like, he may not be at that level, but I think he can improve on what he was. And even, you know, talking to Brian Hedger, that we obviously are good friends with in Cover Columbus, he thinks that Jones is ready for a bounce back year, and he felt like watching him every game last season that he didn't see someone that was struggling as much as sometimes analytics suggest. So I guess we don't always take Hedger by his word. Like, that would be a bad...
So does that make Hedger a capital H, capital M hockey man instead of a... Number boy?
There may be some of that in Hedge. I don't know. I think it's you know, they went out and one of the criticisms is that people thought they should have went after Dougie Hamilton. And going after Dougie Hamilton would have meant you didn't have to give up your assets. And I think that was a big part of this, too, is that there was someone else that was maybe comparable or someone else that could have been the number one defenseman. And the Blackhawks were all in on Seth Jones. So there's a little bit more pressure to it because they gave up not just the contract, but all of it. You know, like if the Blackhawks aren't good this year, they don't have a first-round pick next season, you know, like that, those sort of things, and that's stuff that I'm sure, we can get to at some point, but for now, it's a clean slate, and the Blackhawks made a lot of positive moves this offseason, and I think there's reason for the Blackhawks and their fans to be optimistic about this right now.
All right, number two, I think, probably number one in a lot of people's minds, is Jonathan Toews. You know, when I was talking to DeHaan earlier today, we were going through all the acquisitions and blah, blah, blah. And he goes, and then he goes, don't forget Jonathan Toews. And it's like, yeah, that's an off-season acquisition. You did not have Jonathan Toews in any capacity last year. And you're adding a future Hall of Famer, three-time champion, and your captain. That's a big addition. This lineup looks a lot different with Jonathan Toews at 1C or 2C than it does with, you know, anybody else in there. We don't know exactly what he's going to be. I tweeted this out a little earlier, and people are freaking out and then also making funny comments about it. But I've had three people now tell me that Jonathan Toews is just freaking jacked. Like, he is strong as hell. Like he's been working out during these last couple of months. He's been on the ice for a while now. He's been lifting. He's strong. He's feeling good. Everyone's got good reports about him and that, you know, that there's reason for optimism. Now, the question is, you know, what's the difference between off-season conditioning and actually playing in a hockey game, playing 3 and 4 with travel in between. And that's going to be the thing that I'm going to be watching for all year is Jonathan Toews, how his body responds. We don't know how, you know, someone who's been affected by COVID like this, that's been, you know, dealing with the long-haul effects, how their body's going to respond in year two. Maybe he'll be fine. Maybe he'll be his old self. Maybe he'll be great. But maybe he won't. Maybe he needs, you know, I've been writing about this for years, and every hockey player wants to punch me when I bring it up to them, but there should be load management in the NHL. It's much more, I'm not trying to say basketball is easy, but obviously hockey is a more physically taxing sport, and, you know, the bumps and the bruises that you deal with on a regular basis. I once asked Brett Seabrook about, you know, what would you do if Joel Quenneville asked you to take a night off on this, because, you know, we want to keep you fresh. He basically told me he would punch Joel in the face. Like, it's just not a thing that hockey players accept. They should start accepting it, and it should start with Jonathan Toews this year. You have to be really careful with him, that you don't overwork him. That means not playing him 22 minutes a night, maybe playing him 15 to 17, I mean, taking him off the penalty kill, maybe kind of easing off some of his specialty work, and it means giving him days off. Like, I don't think it's reasonable to expect Jonathan Toews to play 82 games this year. That said, I guarantee you Jonathan Toews is expecting to play 82 games this year. So how Colleton handles that, you know, I'm not saying you got to treat him with kid gloves. You know, let Toews cook. But we don't know how his body will respond to this. He doesn't know how his body will respond to this. And, you know, my hope and my expectation is that Toews will be open with how he's feeling with the team. He will let them know if he thinks he needs the time off. But then it takes a lot for a hockey player to say, take me out of a game.
I will say basketball's grueling in a different way, and there's a reason why they do load management in that way.
Because, you know, like, it's smart in any sport.
Right. Well, I'm just saying. I feel like you dismissed
that. I tried to preface that by saying there's a lot of banging and you're running up and down the court.
It's more of like you're stretching different muscles.
And, yeah, you know, no, 100%. Like, but I'm not saying load management is bad. I'm saying it's necessary. Well,
no, it is. And I think in basketball, you get away with it because you have five guys on the court and yeah, obviously you take away LeBron or someone, like, your team is impacted, but they find ways around it. Where in hockey, you know, on paper, like, it should make more sense. Like, you have four centers, you take one away, but they're less likely to do that. Where they, even like last year, like, you didn't take away Toews for a game or season. It just you lose that faceoff guy, and if you don't have anyone else to win faceoffs, like
Tyler Johnson's pretty good at faceoffs.
Yeah, no, for sure. I do think the Blackhawks have the depth, and maybe this is the way that you really tap into it because, you know, I imagine the next topic we get into is the roster battles, but you have enough guys to fill in for someone, you know? Like, you have enough center depth. Like, it may be Gaudette or Strom, or, like, there might be guys that have played a lot of games and are expecting to play the season, the guys that are sitting, because there's too much depth, and it depends on what Colleton wants to do with some lines, and, you know, if it's like if a guy like Reichel, you know, like, if he's... You know, legit.
He's such an X factor this camp.
Yeah, like there's a number of those. So I feel like you have the personnel where it's not like you're adding like your 13th or 14th normal forward. You're adding like you can take Taves out for a game and put in someone that's fully capable, and you certainly have to shift the minutes around. But I do think that one of the keys is finding ways to that he's not playing 20 minutes. You know, like it's either getting him off the power play or the penalty kill, and you know the penalty kill might be too important just because he can win faceoffs. But there are ways where you can change those minutes, and I feel like even. You know, now that we know what was going on in the bubble, but his minutes were certainly, you know, Doc got more minutes there, and the Blackhawks are at least on paper deeper, so maybe the lines are a little bit more distributed, and you don't have to give them as much. So I definitely think that there's something to that, and I think it's smart for basketball. I know that it's, I'm sure for the fans.
Well,
it's
fans hate it. Yeah,
but
I get
but
that.
But it's what allows these guys. Especially as they get older, and older, and do have that wear and tear, like it's Taves and Kane are two of the oldest guys on this team now. You know, even from what you had talked about with Kane the other day, where it sounds like he hasn't gotten completely over what he was dealing with
at all. No, it sounds like it hasn't. Like it's, and it might not ever be fixed.
And Kane played the most minutes, probably like he was nearly the career high minutes last season. Yep. You know, like at some point, I think those minutes, those ideas have to you have to
modernize the way you think about coaching hockey.
Or even think about how you play it. You know, I think it's up to the player too. You know, like it has to be. I think Colleton was willing to play Kane, but it's also like Kane has. I think Kane has a say in that too, and yep. He always wanted to push, and you saw him taking more. Taking skates off and that type of thing, and maybe you have to deal with that a little bit too, where like you know. Dealing with Marian Hossa, where it was a skin condition, but him and Joel were on the same page. Where like,
oh, he barely ever practiced.
Yeah, if you need the day off, and if it's what's best for your body, like I know that you're professional and you're going to do the right thing, and maybe that's some of that too. It's where maybe we don't see Taves and Kane at as many practices. There's enough veterans in that room too. Like I don't think that's those type of things are all that important. So, but yeah, and I agree with you. I think load management in some capacity would be important.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, let's talk about some of the battles. I want to start with, this isn't like a high priority, but it's the one I'm most interested in, is as you mentioned, Lucas Reichel. Every time we talk about Lucas Reichel, he's been impressive somewhere. He's, you know, going from good to great with men in the German league. He's doing really well, even though the Hawks weren't playing well as a team at the prospect camp. What if he comes into camp and he's just freaking really good? What if you can't send him to Rockford because he is one of your 12 best forwards?
Yeah, I think you have, like, you did that with Doc, right? Like, Doc eventually...
And he didn't even play camp because he got the concussions.
Yeah.
He was barely in camp at all.
Yeah, I think... they've done two... Like, I know that they're supposedly in this rebuilding stage and somewhat, but if he's one of your best players, there has to be a thought to win now. And like, you have enough veterans around here where you can support him, and if he hits a lull, like, you have enough depth where you can send him to Rockford. But if he's one of your best players and he gives you a better chance to win, I think you have to put him out there. Like, when they drafted him, I was a little skeptical, like everyone else, you know, like, and then to see the steps that he took last year in Germany were massive, and then to even see him watching the games in Minnesota the last over this weekend, like, he took another step and he was pretty good on small ice. Like, he made some plays in really small areas that were like, wow, you know, like, he created for himself, created for his teammates. You know, like, if some of his teammates had just finished one-timers, like, he would have had like three or four more assists. You know, the way that he handled the puck, and And everyone's like, well, it's a prospect tournament, and I get that, like, you're not playing NHL level, but I've seen enough stuff at Traverse City and enough of these prospect stuff to, like, if you're a step or two above the rest of the competition, like, you're pretty close to the being NHL ready, and maybe even more. Like, there are a couple guys in the Wild with Matthew Boldy and Marco Rossi that are, I think, NHL caliber now, and guys that are ready to contribute, and I think Lucas Reichel proved that he was just there, you know, as good as, like, Andre Alte Barmakian and Evan Barrett, some of those guys were. They were good, but they weren't Lucas Reichel's level, where, you know, if I was just cutting clips to say these are the best clips, like 60% of them, 70% of them have been Reichel's clips. Like, he was that good at creating for himself and defending and doing all the things. And I think he's, not that he didn't have the coaching staff's attention, but I think it's, they just realized that, you know, he's pretty close and he's going to push someone, and it's going to have to rise a level. And I think this is one of the Blackhawks, what one of the things the Blackhawks really wanted to do with this camp was they wanted some actual battles. Like, a lot of years we go into camp, be like,
you know,
like there might be one or two guys. This year, like, there's 7, 8, 9 maybe forwards. You're like, yeah, for sure. And then it's like, yeah, it's Gaudette, it's Strome, it's Reichel, Carpenter,
Borgstrom.
It's with Jujar. And there's so many different guys that are borderline, you know, like, and then, like, Kurashev, does Kurashev fit on this team? Like,
yeah, I mean, he was very impressive.
He played 50 games last year, and he's one of the guys that doesn't have to go through waivers, so, like, some of that may determine, and Reichel may end up in Rockford just because he doesn't require waivers, and it does make things more simple, but if he produces, and it's like, he's better than Borgstrom, or if he's doing more than Gaudette, or, and I think the fact that he's a little bit different, where I think he brings you more of a defensive, you know, I think he does a lot of things that Colleton likes, especially how aggressive he is and how fast he is on the forecheck. And, you know, like, there are guys like Gaudette and Strome that I think that fall in Colleton's doghouse sometimes just because they aren't those two-way players that he always wants to see. So I think there's a lot of things about Reichel's game that Colleton will like. So I wish I had a piece of paper that would be easier to write down, like, who we think's on the team. But, you know, there's the, you know, top line, DeBrincat,
Kane, Doc, and Kane.
Yeah, second line, Kubalik.
Taves with Kubalik, because they worked great together in the previous season.
And then Hagel?
Well, that's where I would put someone like a Reichel. If I'm going to put Reichel in the game, I'm going to put him with skill players.
Yeah.
Because Hagel, the good thing about Hagel is he can play up and down the lineup. Yeah, he can play with skill players. He's got the speed and he's got some skill, but he's an ideal energy guy, third, fourth liner.
I was thinking more of, like, who's an absolute, but yeah, like, I think Hagel's a guy that plays.
Like, I like that top six. That's a real strong top six.
So the Sailors an opening on that second line for someone. Then the third one would be, like,
Tyler Johnson's your center.
Yep. Hagel.
Strome. You know, what are you going to do with Strome? Are you going to put him on the wing? If he does make the lineup, are you going to put him on the wing? Are you going to give him back at center? Because he's not. You know, Johnson can play the wing also, but he's obviously a good center. That's where you want him. And you figure someone like Ryan Carpenter or someone's going to be your fourth line center now that David Camp's gone. So all of a sudden you're running out of spots pretty quickly with a bunch of guys that think they're going to make
this team. Kurashev, Nylander,
yep.
Gaudette, Reichel,
Borgstrom, Kyra.
Yeah,
there's a lot of guys and not enough spots for them.
No, yeah, there's guys that. Yeah, that played.
And like you said, Kurashev can be sent down. I'm quite certain that Kurashev is one of their 12 best forwards.
Yeah, for sure.
I am not certain he's going to make the team.
And it's, you have enough talent also that, like, if you want to design your fourth line differently, like, you could make it more offensive.
Yeah.
But I know that they want to keep Carpenter. You know, like, they.
Well, you need penalty killers too. You can't have your lineup all be kind of like, you know.
Yeah, and it helps.
I think it helps that
Brinkett and Doc and those guys started playing PK a little bit more, and you got Hagel, and there's a lot. And then even in the forwards, like, you do have, like, probably DeHaan and Jones, maybe McCabe and Murphy, and then Jones and Stillman, and then you have Kelenic, you have Baudin, you have Mitchell. You have young guys who played a lot, you know, like, last season Mitchell started on the top pairing. I know it was a little bit, you know, Duncan Keith was supporting him, but he was, or maybe, did he play with DeHaan to start? Well, either way, like, Mitchell played like a top four, like, it was a big role last season, and, you know, he's got to take a step, but if he looks right, like, they have some tough decisions. Like, if some of those young guys had really taken massive steps, you know, like, they brought in, you know, the fact that they signed Stillman and they, you know, brought in Caleb Jones, like, you brought in some, you have some older guys there too that probably expect to play. And then even in that, like, it's Lincoln and Fleury's net, but they have Subban and Delia there. Like,
this is certainly the deepest team they've had since the Cup years.
Yeah.
I mean, at every position, we're talking about all these forwards, then the defense, yeah, you got all these young guys who have shown they can play in the NHL, whether they should be or not is it different, but they got all these guys, and now you got goaltending depth, you know, out the wazoo here with, like, five NHL-caliber goalies and Soderblom on the way. I need to take a pause here for a second. Are we being optimistic? Because I do we think, like, I'm not used to this sensation of expecting the Blackhawks to be competent. It's been a while, but this feels like the more we talk about it, we're talking about them in really pretty positive terms here. Well, we seem to think they're going to be pretty good this year.
I feel like there's a difference, because having depth, NHL depth, and having being a good team are two different things. Like,
that is true.
Like
it helps, though.
No, for sure. like there's a reason why this team could be good, like, it, you know, but it needs guys like Gaudette and Borgstrom or Reichel, or
yeah.
Like, you need like it needs Tave too. Like, we're also like, we have questions about you know, guys in key roles, whether they're going to be good. So you know, even guy like Nylander, right? Like, Nylander was a top six guy until he got hurt. I mean, obviously he sat the last game in Edmonton, but they had high hopes for him. So you know, if someone comes like him, like, if he's you know, if guys like that pan out and they give you scoring depth, and, you know, you would think DeBrincat, you know, DeBrincat was pretty close being a two-way, elite player now.
Well, think, and you know, we're talking before camp here. By mid-October, everything's going to look different. Nobody saw Brandon Hagel coming last year. Nobody saw that he was going to be that impactful a player. You know, I know you wrote about him a bunch when he was in Rockford. They liked him. But nobody saw this coming. That could be Nylander this year. It could be Reichel. It could be
It could be a lot.
Someone always steps up that you don't expect.
Yeah. And it's even like if a guy like Hagel takes that next step, and for Hagel, it's converting chances. Like, as much as
he creates on every shift.
Yeah, like, if he can put him away into 20 goal scorer, like, that just, it adds. Like, there's a lot of ways that, like, yeah, I can see this workout, and the Blackhawks are really good. It's also where you see, like, if Taves isn't healthy or he can't play, or Doc doesn't, you know, like, he can't get back on the progression, he has problems with his wrist, or Nylander still has his problems, and or Gaudette, you know, as much as work Gaudette put into this offseason, like, if it still doesn't work out, like, there's ways to say, yeah, it's going to be frustrating for the Blackhawks, because all these pieces don't pan out, you know, like, you have all this depth, but it's just guys who are borderline NHL players, or guys who just aren't meeting expectations. So I think it can go either way, but I think the beauty of the beginning of the season is we don't know, and I think a lot of people tend to look on the optimistic side.
Yeah. So. Hope springs eternal in the fall.
Yeah, so yeah, I think there's reasons to be optimistic.
Who are your six defensemen? I've got DeHaan with Jones, a nice, reliable, stay-at-home kind of guy for Jones to be a little more offensive-minded. I've got McCabe and Murphy, because I think that's a dynamite shutdown pair. You want to have those 20 minutes where you can put them against anybody. And then I've got probably Stillman, maybe in and out with Jones, with Kalanuk, because Kalanuk gives you, he can play on the right side, which they're suddenly short on right-handed defensemen. Also, he looked pretty darn good last year, and he's the best of those young guys who deserves to play. And you know, Caleb Jones, like, it's a great thing to be, you know, the two Jones brothers, is a lot of fun to be had with that story-wise, but, you know, Caleb Jones is not going to be playing with his brother. He's not a top-pairing guy, certainly not yet. He's still working his way through the league. But I see him and Stillman are the kind of guys where you can rotate and scratch one and kind of have him in a platoon. But I think you want at least one of these young guys in there every night. Otherwise, you're still... The Blackhawks keep insisting they still have one foot in the rebuild and one foot in the win now. If you're doing that, you can't have all veteran defense.
It's a little, it looks,
isn't Kalanuk actually older than Caleb Jones? I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, Kalanuk's at 24. It looks a little bit different if Kershaw's in Rockford and Mitchell and Beaudin are in Rockford. Like, it looks like last year has less of a...
Yeah, we made, it was such a big deal last year how they got 9 NHL debuts.
You got rid of Suter, and you got rid of Boquist. And yeah, a lot of the guys who played big parts of last season are gone. I think Kalanuk makes a lot of sense. I think, you know, it's maybe unfair at this point, but I see a lot of comparison to Gustafsson, the way that he plays offensively and defensively. At least the numbers weren't good. Like, he was the first year in the pro, so we'll see. I'm also curious, like, I mean, guys like Mitchell and Beaudin, they're really young, and you can take massive steps in the offseason. So depending on, you know, like, those guys can come back and look like different players. So I think, yeah, even seeing Regula, I thought Regula looked pretty good in the prospect tournament. Not that he's ready yet, but I think it can tell you, like, Reichel's progression, like, it tells you what, when you're 19-20 and Mitchell's 22 years old, Beaudin I think 21, like, at this age, like, you can take massive steps depending on what your offseason workouts look like, and, you know, working with skills coaches. So, like, the Blackhawks also have to be prepared that Mitchell or someone comes into camp and just blows their socks away, you know, like, it's, so I think that's the possibility. But I think that having that,
does one blow their socks away?
I don't know,
they blow their socks off.
Oh, wait, I mean,
that's like a bright
going.
That's That was a full-blown Brian Bickleism by you right there, where you just kind of, like, changed the words around a little bit.
That's fine. That's how I say it. I think all those things are really interesting, and but I agree with your defense, and I think Kelnick and Jones is a, you know, and Stillman, like, you also have a lot of guys who played NHL games there at that point, you know, like, I think having, you know, and then having guys in certain specific roles where I think you can shelter, you know, like, Stillman can protect Kelnick a little bit, and it's a little bit more of a sheltered offensive role, where I know Kelnick played a lot with Kane last year, and I thought they were creating something, so, like, you put more guys in the specific roles, and, again, on paper, there's a lot to potentially like there.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Well, let's move on a little bit because we're already running long. Yep. And we've barely even started. The prospect term, we mentioned a little bit about how Reichel looked. Okay, so we talked about that. Who else really stood out to you?
The forwards, I thought Altti Parmakian looked really good. He scored a couple of goals. Him and Evan Barrett played a lot together, and they carried some chemistry last year in Rockford. I think those two guys that could be depth pieces this year. I think within the role, like guys like Josiah Slavin and Mike Hardman or other guys that, you know, if you're looking for some size, I think those are guys that are, you know, are capable. Colton Dock played a lot with Reichel, and, you know, he's probably a little frustrated he didn't bury some chances, but he certainly put himself in position to score some. You know, defensively, Regula and Isaac Phillips played mostly a top pairing, and they have some decent depth defensively in Rockford. You know, they Jacob Gelvis just came over from Finland, and Michael Crudel, you know, him and Isaac Phillips, two guys were supposed to play in the CHL last year and didn't because of the pandemic, and now they're, you know, going to be in their second years in Rockford. And you know, Nolan Allen, their first round pick this year, he was solid. You know, I think he did a lot of things that they like about, you know, defending his zone and moving the puck, and, you know, I think he's a guy that they're really going to be patient with just because he is more of a defensive defenseman, and they don't really have to accelerate him to. Soderblom started the first game, and he was fine. Yeah, I probably just can't gauge goalies sometimes, yeah, and probably hard. Need to see him more of them than just the one game on video. But you know, I thought he looked fine. He made some big saves. So the Blackhawks lost both games, but they honestly controlled the play probably more than the Wild did at times. The Wild at Boldy and Rossi, I think, combined for 4 goals, and most of the goals scored the entire tournament. The 2-game showcase were off a special team, so there weren't a lot of 5-on-5 opportunities. Reichel again was the one that shined. You know, he set up Tepley, who I think Tepley is a guy too. Like, I don't know, like, he just scores goals, and, you know, like, he's the type of guy, you put him around talent, he's going to produce. So Tepley scored a couple of goals, and, you know, Reichel set him up. So yeah, I think the storyline was, you know, obviously Reichel just being probably what they were hoping he could be. And then you have some depth and guys who, a lot of first year guys in Rockford last year and now are second year guys, and are taking those steps, and maybe not guys that are stars in NHL, but you're building depth, and that's what you need.
Well,
you know?
It's interesting. Like, last year, everyone you would have talked about would have made the team at some point.
Yeah,
like,
right. Yeah.
Now the guys that were number 13 or 14, like a Mike Hardman or a Mackenzie Entwistle, all of a sudden are like number 19 on the depth chart, and it's going to be a long time before those guys crack. And that's how it was for all those years when the Hawks were really good. Now, is this Hawks team that good? No. But it's telling about the state of the franchise, where we're talking about long-term prospects now. Even like Mitchell and some of these guys are.
It's harder for those long-term guys to make it just based on the depth they have. Like, you think of all those forwards, in Chicago this year, and then the next tier is like Entwistle and Hardman and guys that Barrett and Altamont Hockey, and that they're probably not going to get that chance right. much this year.
Like last year, like it was all about yeah. giving those guys chances. This year, and this if is those all guys with, get chances, something really shitty happens.
Yeah, and this is all without signing Shalunov, so it's obviously.
How have you been handling that?
I've been coping. Him and Kayumov aren't off great. The great starts and Lokomotiv together.
I feel like first Dylan Sekura, now Max Shalunov. These guys you put so much effort and ground, lay so much groundwork for them to be the guy, and then they break your heart.
Well, Shalunov's different because I've never really covered him from afar.
You want to get into some questions here?
Yeah, let's
see what we got. We have not pre-screened these at all, so forgive me here. I'm calling them up on my phone because I just lost it because I'm an unprepared, unprofessional hack. Here we go. Here we go right off the bat. How many weeks, games into the season will we know if it's the defensive system or coaches versus players? I don't know if you can so easily distinguish that. We can talk about whether Jeremy Colliton is putting these guys in a position to succeed, but you're not going to magically just say, like, oh, it's the coach's fault. Oh, it was the player's fault. Like, it's not going to be that black and white. There's always going to be gray area in these things.
It depends on what it looks like, though, right?
Also, I would like to say this. This is year four now of the system. At some point, the players have to fucking pick it up.
Well, this is the first year I think that there's no... I mean, as good as Keith and Seabrook once were, they weren't those players and they didn't fit this system, and some of that maybe is on Colliton that he didn't change, but he was obviously adamant that this is a system that we're going to eventually win with, and now he's got his players, you know, like Murphy's played well in this. He you know, I'm sure he had a lot of say in Jones and McCabe and even Caleb Jones. Like they've picked out guys that they thought they can play, so I got there's no excuse at this point. And I do think that the prior, you know, like the issues, when you go back and look at why there are breakdowns, it happened because of personnel. Like it was Keith's problems or Zadorov's, and it happens less with other guys. So yeah. like there are guys who play well in the system and there are guys that weren't. So but after this, like if the system isn't working and there are breakdowns, then you can't be like, yeah, it's all on the players because you went out and picked these players. You right. know, like it's someone's fault at that point because they've chosen the personnel.
No, if the team's a disaster, you got to think Jeremy Colliton's seat gets real warm in a hurry.
Sure, yeah.
Because this is not, again, like Colliton was brought on to be the, you know, the young guy whisperer where he was going to be usher them in to become great NHL players. That's not the case anymore. This is now a team that's supposed to compete right away. And if they don't, well, then that's when it starts falling on the coach.
And it also falls on the GM. Like, does Sam Bowman get another coach to hire? Like, they blamed everything on Joel Quenneville. And if Jeremy Colliton doesn't work out, then, like, whose fault is it at that point?
I would say this, though. Like, Joel Quenneville was fired when the team was 6-6-3. Jeremy Colliton's not getting fired if they're 6-6-3.
No, for sure.
They were looking for a reason to fire Joel. Yeah. They're not looking for a reason to fire Jeremy.
I think some things will have to go really sideways right. for them to do that.
It's going to have to be
But at that point, I think pointer fingers become pointed at more than Colliton if they're really that bad.
I agree. We've got some questions we've already answered here. Dylan Strome, Lucas Reichel. Which player do you think will be the best locker room quote on the team this year? I'm telling you. You know, I got a chance to really sit down with Marc-Andre Fleury and Seth Jones at the player tour, and they're both like, I like Seth Jones. He's a pretty laid back dude. Excuse me, just got a phone call. Marc-Andre Fleury, man, it's funny because I covered him almost 20 years ago. I was a rookie on the Penguins beat when he was a rookie base. I covered his draft, and then he was this really shy, giggly, awkward 19-year-old, and now he's just this so confident, thoughtful, you know, worldly, learned, beloved veteran, and I'm really looking forward to, you know, to getting a chance to talk with him more in the future.
I'm hoping the room's open because I think Lincoln and a lot of these guys that we've only talked to. I mean, we talked to Lincoln prior, but Lincoln's a fun quote, and just have an opportunity to hopefully talk to Taves and Kane and all these guys face to face. Like, just the conversations are a lot better, and yeah, I think there's a lot of guys in the room that'll be. It'd be great quotes, and it's a lot easier if it's, you know, in person. So I know we've got mixed messages, but right now it sounds like the Blackhawks room's
for now it's open.
For open, so we're hopeful that things are back to normal, and we're traveling and we're booking trips, and I'm really optimistic about yeah, it'd be fun to cover. I guess a team that's successful and all that, and but those things really, like, we're still going to do our job. But our job's a lot easier done when it's access. So I think it helps our creativity and it helps us write better stories. So I'm definitely looking forward to this season just because there's potential to have open locker rooms again.
Okay, Mike S is asking, who will center the fourth line? Carpenter, Kyra, or someone else? I think Carpenter has the edge because, you know, he's been a consistent presence on that fourth line on the wing with David Camp in the center. He is a center by trade, and he can win a faceoff, and Colleton trusts him. But there's a lot of options down there.
Yeah, Carpenter's faceoff numbers aren't... they've been kind of up and down. I think it's going to come down to some of that, too, because, like, I wonder if Tyler... Like, if Borgstrom or Strom or someone takes the third-line center spot, like, does Tyler Johnson get bumped to the fourth line, maybe?
I mean, he was playing it in Tampa.
And Tyler Johnson has a pretty good faceoff percentage, so, like, I wouldn't dismiss that as a possibility too, where I think a lot of it matters too, like where does Reichel, if he fits in, Strom, Gaudet, there's a lot of guys who have played center, Borgstrom, can they win faceoffs? Does Doc improve? Like, some of it's there too, like, if it depends on if you need Taves taking all the defensive zone faceoffs, or I think some of that, how they set up the lines will be based on some of that too. So I think Carpenter,
this lineup, though, I mean, almost everyone in this lineup has played center at some point.
Yeah, no, they have
so many options that Colleton loves that. It's going to be like Team Canada, it's not as good. They're going to have, like, 11 centers in their top 12. Last, we got Waving Worm here. Has management been inconsistent about their messaging on goalies? Crawford wasn't offered a two-year contract because of the transition to younger goalies. Now Marc-Andre Fleury is taking what would have been Crawford's second year. Or do they not just, or do they just not trust Crawford? I don't think it's that. I think I think they really did enter last season thinking, all right, we're starting over here. We're starting from scratch. Then all of a sudden things start changing. It's like, all right, well, some of these guys are more ready than we expected them to be. And maybe we want to push a little harder. And all of a sudden Seth Jones is disgruntled in Columbus and like, ooh, maybe we can go get him. And then
someone
took Seabrook's contract. The Marc-Andre Fleury thing is a lot like the Robin Leonard thing where it's like, well, he's available. Well, why
for
wouldn't
nothing,
you? Why wouldn't you? Yeah, they gave up cap space. That's all for him. Like, why wouldn't you do that?
You have the cap space.
So I don't think they intended, when they sent out that letter to fans in October, they didn't think this is a one-year thing and next year we're going to be loading up. But the situation changed. Options were available to them and they were aggressive. We'll see if it was for the best, for better or worse.
If Delia or Subban were more, like, if they had better seasons, I don't think they, you know, like, if they were two guys, be like, these are guys that we want. And both of them were inconsistent, you know? Like, I think they were very sure on Lincoln and being, you know, a 2 or a 1A, 1B. And I feel like they're like, we need to address goalies still. Like, there wasn't enough in Delia to Subban to say that if we put these goalies back out there, that it's going to be much different than we saw last season, where it's ups and downs. Where Subban certainly had good games, but when you look at his overall percentage, it wasn't great. And Delia certainly, lost faith early on, and he was good late in the season. But there's not enough of a sample size there to say that, yeah, we can rely on Delia next season. So the fact that you can go out and get someone who, you know, Vezina winner for a minor prospect, and you have the cap space, like, it all added up. So I don't know if it's so much the messaging. I think they traded, they didn't sign Crawford because they did want to provide that opportunity last season to see what they had, and they went through with it, and there were some decisions based off of that now.
So any last thoughts? Anything you want to get into?
I'm
ready to get back to it.
Yeah, I'm ready. Yeah, it's been a long off season of covering different things, and it'll be nice to cover some hockey, and
just to be back on the road, hopefully back in the rooms, and just to be able to do our jobs the way it's meant to be, because, we appreciate all the subscribers who have stuck with us for the last 18 months, but, you know, I know Scott and I, we always talk about how we just feel like we're not doing our jobs to the best of our abilities because the situation doesn't allow for it. I mean, doing things over Zoom or even over the phone when the Blackhawks, hook us up with a player to talk to, it's just not the same as kind of roving around the locker room and picking up stories and casual conversations that lead to interesting ideas and just being around the rink and being around scouts and other sources.
There's
that we
a guy
can
outside our window just took off his
he
shirt.
Is, and let me tell you, he should put a shirt on.
I don't know if you realize it. This will be our 10th season.
Coming. I've thought about that a lot. I'm all about round numbers.
Yeah, so maybe
10 seasons.
If something comes back to normal this year, maybe in the spring we do some kind of subscriber event.
Yeah, I just passed my 3-year anniversary here.
Yeah,
you've been here since day one. I mean,
six years come February.
Yeah, I mean, we both started the same day, January 19th, 2013, when training camp opened after the lockout ended. You at ESPN.
Maybe we can go back to Prague and go back to that bar.
That's the best.
Yeah. But yeah, 10 seasons. I considering that I didn't want to cover this in Haiti the first year.
That first day, you were very unhappy to be there. And I was like, yay, I'm covering the NHL. We had very different mentalities in it. And
now we're sitting in a car together and do podcasts.
It's in the rain while some fat guy takes his shirt off.
But no, I'm excited. I think we're going to have, we had a little bit of our season planning meeting at Manny's, and we have too many ideas already.
We're trying to figure out how not to blow them all on day one, put it that way. That's our current plan, is the triage of, oh my God, there's 9,000 storylines right off the bat.
Yeah. No, I think it's, the fact that there are so many different players that are really interesting, like it really lends itself to, a lot of story ideas.
And we're still giving subscriptions. They just extended the current deal of 50% off an annual subscription, which is an insanely good deal.
For new subscribers.
All the way to the middle of October, so now's the time. If you weren't a subscriber over the summer, now's the time, because we're going to be writing just an insane amount of stories.
And we'll be back to doing this weekly again. And
The podcast will... We will try to come out on Mondays consistently, but the schedule doesn't always allow for that. We're not going to have a podcast come out at 4 p.m. on a Monday when there's a game 2 hours later. So the schedule will dictate that, and we're traveling again, will dictate that. But, look for us on Mondays or Tuesdays most weeks, and, yell at us on the internet.
Yep.
We're there.
All right. For Mark Lazarus, I am Scott Powers, and this is Laz and Powers, and we'll talk to you soon.
See ya.
And I know that I can't fix it. I can help even just a little bit. Won't you let me try?